You can watch and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Matt Walsh, Brian Wolfmiller, and Hans Feeney at the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. All paid registrants will have the ability to watch the conference live and on demand. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or give us a call 618-223-8385.
Yeah, it's all about force. And, you know, I've started to get calls in the last week or two. The people who mocked me and others, including you, for making too much of what appeared to be college kids going wild on college campuses, some of them have started to call and say, I got it wrong. What do we do now?
That's former Evergreen State College professor Brett Weinstein on the Joe Rogan Experience talking about, well, it was about 3 years ago, I think, when Evergreen State was in the news because the students there were demanding, I think, what you'd call intellectual intolerance, even of their professors. He, I believe, was told that he should just lose his job. And he was calling out early, not as early as some, but early, sounding the alarm on what was going on campus, not only at Evergreen State, but on campuses all over the country. We're going to be talking about a move to increase intellectual diversity in higher education. There are several states that either have or are considering laws that would require universities and college campuses, sometimes at the pain of public funds, to encourage intellectual diversity, to, in spite of what some of the professors and some of those students may be saying they want to hear, they need to hear diverse ideas on campus. They need to be able to hear them, understand them, and if they want to, disagree with them. Why is it that our universities have become such closed-minded places? We're going to be talking about that with Mark Hemingway, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations and author of a recent column titled Momentum Building in States and Require Campus Intellectual Diversity. Joining us to talk about intellectual diversity in higher education, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations and author of a recent column titled Momentum Building in States to Require Campus Intellectual Diversity. Mark, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
So what is the situation that has even progressives in education like Brett Weinstein of Evergreen State College, what is it that has them concerned about life on campus?
Well, I think that, you know, everybody that's been paying attention to the news the past, you know, 4 or 5 years has noted that there's been this sort of like sudden explosion of campus radicalism on a level that's sort of deeply problematic. You know, I forget it was 2015 or 2016, there were major protests that erupted at the University of Missouri that like shut down the campus, required the chancellor to resign, and it was so disruptive that the net effect of it was the University of Missouri shut down something like 4 dorms because the students weren't returning. I mean, it was so bad. And then there are all kinds of other things where, you know, speakers being attacked and, you know, riots over, you know, conservative speakers and campus, things like that. So that triggered a legislative reaction. The first wave was something like 17 states have now passed free speech on campus laws, basically mandating that campuses permit free speech, because a lot of campuses have taken it upon themselves to pass like speech codes and things like that, limiting what you can say on campus, you know, even if they run counter to the First Amendment and other things like that. So that has happened, but even though we've passed all these free speech laws, a lot of legislatures aren't really seeing the change they want to see on campus. And, you know, as you pointed out, even progressive professors like Brett Weinstein, who is a professor at Evergreen College, who famously had to leave campus and he settled with the university for $500,000 for failing to keep him safe when he protested the way they were going about a specific student diversity event. But anyway, the second wave is that because they're not getting the desired effect and professors are still being driven off of campus, states are passing laws or contemplating passing laws right now to mandate that colleges provide for an environment that creates intellectual diversity. Although how they go about doing that and how they mandate that colleges go about exposing students to a variety of different views is kind of unclear, and they're experimenting with a bunch of different ways, but it's pretty clear that campus radicalism is a problem and legislatures are looking to deal with it.
Is this a problem with the students primarily, or is it a problem with students, faculty, and staff?
It's an all of the above problem. I mean, a big problem, what's going on here is that, I hate to use the phrase cultural Marxism because it makes you sound like some kind of right-wing nut job, but in an academic context, I mean, that's exactly what's going on here. I mean, anyone who's familiar with, like, critical theory or critical race theory, which is, you know, a big part of what's happening now, even that's spilling out in the riots we've seen in the last week, there are these things that are being taught where they, you know, don't just teach you a specific, like, left-wing ideology. Part of that ideology is that the purpose of education is to create revolutionary activists, not to, like, inform people or, you know, help them get employed. And so we're seeing a couple generations now of students and faculty that have been marinating in this cultural Marxist ideology, and that's what's happening on campus, and now it's spilling off of campus into the streets. And this is something that I think, you know, states with more conservative legislatures are obviously concerned about, and that's why they're trying to, you know, look at legislative attempts to diversify the faculty and make sure that, you know, conservatives are on campus and presenting their ideas and making sure that there are conservative speakers that appear on campus, you know, and can do so without being, you know, challenged or shut down. And so that's what's going on here.
Are these laws, or at least the contemplation of these laws, because of course the devil's in the details, is it meeting with some resistance from academics or other organizations?
So, right, as of now, only one state, South Dakota, has actually passed a intellectual diversity law that mandates that all the public universities in the state, what it says is that the Board of Regents in South Dakota must compile a report for each one of the six public universities in the state mandating it, that says what they're doing to create an environment of intellectual diversity on campus, but it's very open-ended. It doesn't really say much beyond that. Some of the bills that haven't passed, like in Kansas and some other places, they go even further where they mandate that the universities provide for a program of speakers of differing viewpoints and things like that. You know, I'll be perfectly honest. I mean, these intellectual diversity bills are fraught with various First Amendment concerns, and, you know, it's difficult to go about ensuring that all viewpoints are represented in sort of an egalitarian way.
What has been the response of the American Civil Liberties Union?
So the American Civil Liberties Union have, you know, they oppose the South Dakota bill. The American Civil Liberties Union says they're generally in favor of free speech on campus, but they oppose this on the grounds that, you know, it makes them nervous, essentially, whenever people start compiling lists of, you know, employee ideology, which is, you know, almost what you could see situations here where that might be what happens, where the Board of Regents wants to diversify the faculty, so they have to, like, survey what people believe, and you can see where that would be, you know, problematic. So they opposed it for that reason, but at the same time, to get back to the previous question, which I guess didn't really answer well, it is absolutely true. It's being met with resistance at all levels. Board of Regents in South Dakota doesn't particularly like this because it usurps their authority. And obviously the faculty, even in more conservative South Dakota, public universities tend to be way more liberal than the rest of the population. And they really resent having to create a campus environment that's more reflective of the politics and culture of the state at large rather than their own little liberal pockets of that.
Have any concerns been raised about academic freedom?
Yes, there have been lots of concerns raised about academic freedom with regard to that. The fact that's been sort of the number one thing that people are protesting, you know, in theory, campuses are supposed to be places of free inquiry that are left unmolested. However, as I talk in the piece, one of the law professors at the University of South Dakota, Patrick Gary, is a more conservative law professor. He's written a piece arguing that academic freedoms don't really apply to what's going on here, because when they, you know, we created sort of a legal and cultural architecture for academic freedom in the 50s and 60s. Again, it was based on this idea that campuses were generally places where you heard a diversity of viewpoints. Well, now we have a situation here where surveys show that Democrats outnumber Republicans on campus 11-1, and there are surveys that have done that show that major universities literally have no self-identified Republicans on faculty. And on top of that, they have all these speech codes and other things like that that sort of by design prevent people with conservative or differing viewpoints from speaking up. So academic freedom isn't much of a defense when academic freedom is only granted under the guise that open inquiry is taking place. If you don't have open inquiry, you don't have academic freedom. And, you know, I think it's a pretty fair argument to make that the climate on contemporary college campuses is not one of open inquiry.
Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about intellectual diversity in higher education. He's senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. He's authored a recent column titled Momentum Building in States to Require Campus Intellectual Diversity. We'll be right back. The Boy Who Was Lost, The Beggar's Greatest Wish, The Unforgiving Servant. These are some of the 12 stories that you'll find in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Archbook's Treasury, Life of Jesus. Learn more about this resource for children, grandchildren, and godchildren ages 5 through 9 at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Archbook's Treasury, Life of Jesus, 1-800-325-3040.
If you're visiting Frankenmuth, Michigan, come to Emmanuel Lutheran Church in nearby Frankentrost. A hardy band of German missionaries founded Emmanuel Frankentrost in the wilderness near Saginaw. At Emmanuel, you can still hear the law and gospel in a beautiful liturgical service, just like those first settlers. For directions and divine service times, visit frankentrost.org. That's FrankenTrost.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Have you ever wondered if your investments could do more? I mean, a whole lot more? This is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. When you invest with us, you not only earn a competitive interest rate, but your investment goes to strengthen Lutheran Church Missouri Synod church workers, congregations, schools, and organizations through low-cost loans and services. To learn more, visit lcef.org/invest101.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Bethany Lutheran, Fairview Heights, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Arcadia, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Henderson, Nevada. Emmanuel Lutheran, Frankentrost, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas. Peace Lutheran, Chehalis, Washington. Redeemer Lutheran, St. Cloud, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, San Benito, Texas. St. Paul Lutheran, Sevierville, Tennessee, and Trinity Lutheran, Tryon, North Carolina. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about intellectual diversity in higher education. Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. We're going to spend an hour with Mark and his wife, Molly, responding to questions and comments from attendees of the 2020 virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 24th and Saturday, July 25th. Attendees have the ability to watch a live stream or at their convenience on demand. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org or give us a call, 618-223-8385, the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Mark, I'm curious about those speech codes you mentioned before the break. Are you aware of any attempts to challenge them legally or even constitutionally?
Oh, there have been tons of lawsuits over the years, but it's just a really slippery thing. I mean, they take all kinds of different forms on different campuses. You know, the law depends on whether or not they're private campuses or whether they're public campuses. There is an entire organization called FIRE, Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, that basically does nothing but, like, run around and try and assist legally whenever students or professors are caught up in these, you know, things. It's become kind of a full-time job. But, you know, so, and, you know, there's been a big improvement. Like I said, 17 states have passed laws basically negating these things in one form or another. So there is momentum against them for sure, but, you know, it hasn't really risen to a, you know, sort of national level quite yet.
So what do you think the future is of these kinds of laws and these kind of efforts to bring intellectual diversity back to our university and college campuses?
Well, I mean, it's really tough because basically what you have to do is you have to sort of like break the hold of, you know, a very pervasive amount of ideology. We mentioned the Professor Brett Weinstein before, and one of the things that he's been talking about lately and he's very alarmed by is Weinstein is an atheist and an evolutionary biologist, and he's a strict sort of a rationalist. And what he's very concerned about is, you know, these Marxist ideologies are sort of very religious in nature. You know, if you try and deny the reality of oppression, that just proves how much of an oppressor you are. I mean, it's basically a logical trap. And these kinds of ideologies are infecting even the hard sciences, which is, you know, and are totally incompatible with things like the scientific method. So you're creating a situation here where it becomes impossible to learn anything that involves any sort of, like, you know, notion of empirical truth in a college setting without somebody screaming racism or something like that. And it really is impeding things. So I think that we need to, one, parents need to, like, wake up to the reality of what's going on in college campuses. I mean, for too long we've treated college campuses as just a place where you go and, you know, you'll get sort of a general education, but in reality it's about getting your ticket punched so you can get a higher paying job. You know, we need to get rid of that sort of laissez-faire attitude, and we need to understand that education is sort of fundamentally a moral thing, and it is designed to create good citizens. And in order to do that, we have to start paying a lot more attention to the ideas that are being spread on these campuses. We have to be, you know, get educated about the problems on campuses and make decisions about where we send our kids to school and how we get them educated that avoid that kind of, you know, sort of dangerous ideology, and this ideology that is basically set up to make them unhappy and turn them out into the streets and be angry about all the injustice in the world that may or may not exist.
Are you concerned at all under the category of unintended consequences that these kinds of laws to encourage intellectual diversity could backfire or fall into the wrong hands and be used against, say, the ideas that are trying to be maintained on religiously based campuses?
Yes. I am. In fact, I was just, before I got on this phone call, I was communicating with a lawyer that I know who is a conservative Christian who reached out to me precisely because he has reservations about some of these intellectual diversity requirements and how they could possibly be used. So, yes, it's definitely something we need to be aware of, but the main thing is that this is a cultural problem, and until we, like, fix the culture of campuses, you know, the legal thing is really going to be just a Band-Aid, and we've got to be aware of what this kind of education is doing to our children, and we need to be educated enough to know where we can send our kids to get them, like, a real education that values morals and empiricism as opposed to, you know, what is, frankly, a religious ideology.
What do parents who are preparing to send their kids, if things open up again, to a big state university for the first time as freshmen, what do they need to know about what the intellectual life on campus is really like?
Well, one, I do think they need to, like, look at the campus and what's going on there. Like, what kind of student groups are allowed to exist? I mean, a lot of campuses won't allow religious student groups or, you know, conservative political student groups. And this has been a source of, you know, contention. You know, if the campus environment is open enough to, you know, allow religious student groups, you know, operate without being interfered with, that's generally a good sign. The second thing is, and with all of the things that we've seen in recent months, it sounds crazy, but I mean, I really think that people are going to have to get educated on the specifics of the ideology. They're going to have to start understanding terms like critical theory and critical race theory and cultural Marxism and what this all means. Because if you look at what's going on here, if you look at the bestsellers list right now, you see books like White Fragility and How to Be an Anti-Racist that are pushing this critical theory stuff that I think is just frankly damaging and divisive. You know, they may say it's about fighting racism, but in reality, it's just going to create more division because it's pushing this sort of, you know, Marxist rhetorical cul-de-sac that's designed to, you know, tell people that the more they fight their impulse to be racist, the more racist they become. And I just think that people are going to have to, like, know what these ideas are out in the culture and what's being taught on campuses and give their kids the kind of education that values, you know, both transcendent truth and, you know, empirical truth, and kids that hold firm to that. So when they encounter these things, they know how to respond.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for Real Clear Investigations and author of a recent column titled Momentum Building in States to Require Campus Intellectual Diversity. You can read it on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org, and you can follow Mark on Twitter at Heminator. That's at Heminator. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
Peter Bender joins us on the other side of the break. Our series on Lutheran catechesis is slowly winding to a close. We're going to talk about his favorite subject, creating a culture of catechesis and prayer in a Christian congregation. Would you like to help a college or seminary student watch the 2020 Virtual Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $125 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship, or you can make your $125 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Timeless truth that prepares scholars to serve their neighbor in all of life through their various vocations. This is what scholars receive at Wittenberg Academy. If you are looking for a solidly Lutheran online education for your child, consider Wittenberg Academy, where doctrine is sound, academics are rigorous, and relationships are genuine. We offer full-time, part-time, and diploma track options to meet your child's Lutheran education needs. We partner with brick-and-mortar schools and homeschools. You can find out more at wittenbergacademy.org.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging. And what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all.